This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the September 11th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report podcast presented by MyBookie with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. And come up here on this week's edition of the show, we're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend at UFC 242 and Bellator 226. We're going to preview Saturday's UFC Vancouver card, which is headlined by just an awesome matchup between Donald Cerrone and Justin Gaethje. Also, we're going to talk about some MMA news and notes. Chris Cyborg, Diaz Masvidal, Colby Covington, everything related to UFC 244. Plus, I'm going to have three interviews for you. You're going to hear from Henry Corrales, who's going to meet Darren Caldwell here coming up in two weeks, at Bellator 228. In the Bellator Featherweight World Grand Prix. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Trey Ogden, who's going to be in the main event of Friday's LFA 76. And the other interview is going to be with Mike Richmond, who's going to be fighting for Valor Bare Knuckle 1, their inaugural event coming up on September 21st. I had a great conversation with Mike Richmond. Daniel, man, how you doing, man?
Oh, Jason, I'm doing quite well. I mean, we got a whole heck of a lot to talk about on this here podcast. It is a great 2 week period to be a mixed martial arts fan. We just are coming off a nice event from Bellator with a little bit of controversy in the main event. And of course, every time a championship is defended in the UFC, it's usually an interesting talking point. And UFC 242 did not disappoint. And of course, we get a look ahead to one hell of a main event between Justin Gaethje and Donald Cerrone. So I'm just excited to be talking some MMA and definitely not football. So let's get on with the MMA, Jason.
Yeah, I will tell you. Yeah, obviously, I will say Monday night was not a pleasant 2 minutes for you. I know that, but that, just as a fan, that was fun for me to watch. But I can only imagine what was going on in your home watching those.
I must have felt like a Dustin Poirier fan because I tell you what, as a Texans fan, it's always miserable, but. But that had my heart ripped out from me because I just knew we were going to lose because we always lose just in general. So I felt much like if you were a fan of Dustin Poirier, if you had your Dustin Poirier fighter kit, I guess the only difference is Poirier never really had a chance to win that fight, Jason. It was all Khabib Nurmagomedov in that fight. Rather, the Texans actually had the lead. Poirier never really did.
You know, Poirier had his moment there in the second round where he landed a good punch. And I'll tell you what impressed me the most about Khabib, and you can talk about what he did with just taking Dustin Poirier down at will and keeping him there and also doing a lot of work on the bottom. Just looking at the fight stats, he passed 5 times on the ground, 7 of 8 for his takedown defense. But to me, what really impressed me the most about Khabib in that fight is that 1-2 punch combination that Dustin landed. That, I mean, look, it hurt Khabib. There's no question about it. But once you see after the initial, strike that Dustin Poirier landed, what impressed me the most about Khabib was the head movement where Dustin could not, follow up those punches. And I don't know if that's a Khabib of 3 years ago or even 2 years ago. Dustin Poirier might be your UFC lightweight champion, but when that fight's over and you see John Anik interviewing Dustin Poirier in the octagon, it came off as this is an athlete that is sitting there going, I just fought the best athlete in the world in my sport, and I know I can't beat him. And it's that very defeated moment of like, is there anything I'm going to be able to do to ever beat this guy? He looked absolutely defeated. And, then there was that brief social media post where he kind of said, if I decide to fight again, then of course he calls out Connor. Connor basically says, no, dog, not interested in that fight. You don't interest me. But to me, did you get that same feeling? It was such a defeated athlete that he's like, there's nothing I can do to beat that guy.
Yeah, because that's exactly how it played out. It was a moment where it was just a confirmation that Nurmagomedov is absolutely, like, pound for pound one of the top guys in the sport right now. I mean, he's just unbelievable. And the thing about him is there aren't a whole lot of challengers there for him. Obviously, Tony Ferguson is the big one that we can't wait to see happen. And there's a couple other. I think we'll tackle that later. But for me, the big takeaway is 11 months out, Nurmagomedov returns to the octagon, and he looks awesome. And not only does he look awesome, he maintains his maturity and patience, because, you know, that fight started off kind of slowly with both guys testing the waters, and a showcase for Dustin. There was a real, real sense of not making a poor decision and allowing Nurmagomedov to capitalize on a takedown. That kind of handicaps his offensive ability. And that's just exactly what Nurmagomedov's going to do against most lightweights. Most lightweights are going to handicap their offense ability because they're going to be looking out for the wrestling in Nurmagomedov. And, you know, that's the interesting thing about the Tony Ferguson fight is I feel like he's not going to do that. He's going to go full force at Nurmagomedov. But for Nurmagomedov, all I can think of when watching him fight is this is just one of the best decision makers inside the octagon. Like, he comes into the cage with just an unbelievable skill set. You mentioned the head movement for his striking defense. He's a phenomenal striker and just one of the best wrestlers we have seen in the UFC. A great grappler, and he appears to be really strong. He has all the skill set, but what really separates Nurmagomedov in my book is the decision making. When to engage on the takedown, when to test the waters, how patient he is waiting for openings to come. For Nurmagomedov, to me, he just has a great, great sense of when to pick his spots with his wrestling, evade offensive strikes, and he, to me, is just a very dangerous, dangerous champion that if he gets past Tony Ferguson, if they even fight, knock on wood, I think he's going to hold on to this title for a long time. That's what this performance told me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Just as fight fans, I mean, yes, we cover the sport, but, you know, we're fans of the sport. We're just hoping that we are going to see Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson. It's just, you know, obviously this fight's been booked, what, 4 or 5 times? You know, somewhere in that range at this point. We just haven't seen it. So hopefully this is a fight that we're going to see. You know, there is this thought in my back of my mind is that the UFC will say, you know what, man, let's get all the money we can out of Khabib versus Conor, even though I think that's the wrong way to go there. But, you know, when I look at this top 10 in the UFC lightweight division, outside of Tony Ferguson, there is not one guy I would sit there and pick to beat Khabib Nurmagomedov. Now, you know, if you look at the ranking system on UFC.com, which we know really isn't a true ranking system, but let's go to challengers 1 through 10. 1, Tony Ferguson. I don't think I would pick Tony Ferguson to beat Khabib, but I think inside these top 10 fighters, he clearly has the best chance. Then, of course, 2, Dustin Poirier. 3, Conor McGregor. 4, Donald Cerrone. 5, Justin Gaethje. 6, Ally Quinta. 7, Paul Felder. 8, Kevin Lee. 9, Edson Barboza. 10 is Anthony Pettis. If you tell me I had to pick one fighter outside of Tony Ferguson that I think has a legitimate shot to have a place to potentially beat Khabib, I would point to Justin Gaethje, just because Gaethje at least does have that wrestling background.
You know, that to me is the guy to point at in that top 10 for sure. The problem with that top 10 is, like, I don't feel confident in Gaethje winning either. Even though he does have that wrestling background, I just don't think it's up to snuff. I mean, my general thought is, damn, if Nurmagomedov gets past Ferguson, it's a wrap for a while. A lot of these guys, we've seen them hit their ceiling, or we see them close to hitting their ceiling, and it's nowhere near where Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson are at. I think, honest to God, you got to expand the parameters if you want to look at the guy who's most likely to beat Nurmagomedov. You got to say, let's look at the top 11 UFC fighter.
You go, my boy.
Yeah.
My boy, Gregor.
Because Gregor Gillespie is not maybe the most talented guy in the lightweight division today. But damn, he's looked great in his UFC career. And when you're looking at potential guys to dethrone Nurmagomedov, you're looking at fighters who are still on the up and up, climbing up their rankings, who haven't really showcased what they're fully, truly capable of. And Gregor is absolutely the leading the class of the lightweight insurgents that are slowly but surely impressing their way. So to me, that's the type of makeup, that's the type of fighter you're looking at, a guy who runs through the competition, who is undefeated in the UFC, or is just looking like he's really put things together. So honest to God, to me, the fighter most likely to beat Nurmagomedov is outside the top 10, and it's Gregor Gillespie.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of Gregor Gillespie. I mean, look, right now he's not ready for that. I mean, just being honest about it, but you give this guy 12, 18 months to really work on that strike. I mean, look, the wrestling's there. But on the other side of the equation, we've got Dustin Poirier. You know, obviously, clearly he still wants to fight. He calls out Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor basically essentially says, not interested in that fight. And you brought, when we were going back and forth last night on text message, you're like, you know, hey, let's talk about what's next for Dustin Poirier. And I think there's a couple options out there. If Cerrone wins on Saturday night, I think that's an option. If Gaethje wins Saturday night, I don't think the UFC would go back to that fight. If Conor does get Khabib, I guess you would say Tony Ferguson for Poirier.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. I could even see him getting Donald Cerrone if Donald Cerrone loses, I think. I mean, because for Gaethje, if Gaethje wins, I mean, God dang, Gaethje Poirier would be awesome. Cerrone Poirier would be awesome, and then Gaethje getting a title shot would be awesome. And honestly, it's like Gaethje Cerrone winner might even get Conor McGregor, depending on if he fights sooner rather than later. So I think Cerrone Poirier is the one that makes the most sense. The question is, how do we get there?
Yeah.
And maybe with the win, I mean, Cerrone's probably going to have to fight him, but I think Cerrone Poirier is actually the thing that makes the most sense. Obviously, we've seen, in the Twitter landscape that Poirier's called out Conor McGregor. So that's something that we've seen for sure, and maybe that will play out. I mean, maybe you look towards the guys who fought in the co-main event spot in Paul Felder, Edson Barboza as possible matchups, specifically Paul Felder attempting to move up the rankings. But I mean, that fight was so close that you can make a case for either guy getting that fight. And that to me is interesting because, like, all these fights we're mentioning, all these names, damn, if you're going to pick one division to watch this year and this next year, it's the lightweight division. I mean, think of these names: Ferguson, Poirier, Cerrone, Gaethje, Felder, Barboza, Anthony Pettis. These are guys who are in the top 10. Think of how exciting these fighters are. So to me, kind of my general big time takeaway when we project fights is, wow, the lightweight division is absolutely stacked in terms of entertaining fighters.
I'd put
they also have Nurmagomedov.
I'd put welterweight right up there.
That one's pretty good too, man.
I mean, you think about, obviously we'll talk about later on the show with what's going on there with Diaz and Masvidal and the whole title picture there. But when you look at that, you know, even the top 10, you know, I know Stephen Thompson is now going to take on Vicente Luque at UFC 244. That's a fight that definitely interests me. Tyron Woodley's kind of the forgotten guy of that division, and we'll see what happens in terms of a picture. But you look at the run Leon Edwards has been on. Darren Till no longer at 170, not 185, so you gotta kind of scratch him out of there. And Santiago Ponzinibbio, I think that, I understand what you say about the lightweight division, but I think you gotta put the welterweight division right up there as well.
Absolutely, that division looks good too, and it's certainly a good time to be a UFC fan if you pick and choose which fight cards to watch. So I don't know, man. I think for Dustin, I think what he realized here is he hopes somebody else wins that lightweight title. Because as long as Nurmagomedov has it and he's fighting in his prime, that wrestling, that top control, Dustin, one of the most talented fighters I've seen, he looked unbelievable in his most recent run, taking out Max Holloway, the featherweight champion.
Think about this. Dustin Poirier only landed 12 significant strikes in this fight, and 8 of them came in the second round.
So 4 fights. So 4 strikes, significant strikes, in a round in 2 minutes, basically. That's if you take out round 2, that's insane. I mean, that fight lasted 12 minutes and 6 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, and look, it was pure domination. But there was, look, I think as Americans, we were rooting for Dustin Poirier. You know, you had that sense of national pride. But it was very early on, once that fight started, you're just like, it was literally like Dustin Poirier is kind of, there was moments when he's on the ground in that first round where he's looking over his corner of like, what do I do? I mean, it's just Khabib's just a different animal. You know, you talk about that lightweight division, Paul Felder, Edson Barboza, split decision win for Paul Felder. I don't know how any judge saw that fight 30-27 for Paul Felder. I don't agree with 30-27 for Edson Barboza. I think it's 29-28 either way. You know, in terms of this fight, I mean, I think if you're Paul Felder, you're pretty grateful that you were able to get that decision win there, because it easily could not have gone his way.
Oh, this is absolutely a fight. I watched it. I'm like, I'm glad I'm not a judge, because it was close. I was just sitting down enjoying it with the bag of popcorn. Granted, it was 9 in the morning, you know, but hey, I enjoyed it. I watched this one on the old replay. I had to watch Nurmagomedov Poirier live. I had to watch that one live, but everything else was kind of for the DVR. And this one was unbelievable. I mean, I just loved it. I mean, after one round, both these guys had already looked like they fought for 15 straight minutes. You mentioned it to me. I do think round one was definitely Barboza. And honestly, round 2 and 3 were razor thin, and it was a close fight. This is a fight where if you watch it, there's no loser. It's unbelievable to me that this didn't win fight of the night. And they just gave out 4 performance of the night bonuses, because I thought this was a tremendous contest and something that I would definitely wouldn't mind watching one more time. But this was a good fight for sure in terms of entertainment value. In terms of separating themselves from each other, neither guy did that. You don't come away from this fight saying this is a lightweight champion contender, but you do come away saying, I can't wait to see both Paul Felder and Edson Barboza fight next. So the good thing is there are plenty of intriguing matchups for Paul Felder. His stand-up looked good. He went toe-to-toe with one of the most dangerous strikers at 155. And I thought overall it was a success, and I wouldn't be shocked if we get one more fight between these two.
Yeah, we've now seen them fight already 2 times. 2 decisions. Even when you look at the fight stats, I mean, they're pretty similar. The one thing that does stick out to you is that Paul Felder was the more active striker in the fight, throwing 40 more significant strikes, 41 more total strikes. Edson Barboza did have a takedown. When it comes to the rest of this card, you know, Curtis Blaydes, you know, went out there and you know, a great performance by him. I think you got to look at a guy that obviously from your area in Texas, Diego Fajeya, a great win for him. You know, but the 2 ones I'll really highlight is Jojo Calderwood versus Andrea Lee. You know, Jojo gets the win. It was a fight that once that fight's over, I was like, I don't see either one of these girls giving Valentina Shevchenko a run for her money at 125 pounds. And the other one has to be Sarah Morse getting a win, dominating win. Of course, she did miss weight. So those are kind of the things that really stuck out to me about this card. And I know you're going to talk about one of the fighters on this card that had a highlight reel knockout.
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, you talk about lightweight prospects. We got one, Jason. Otman Azatar. Whoa. Undefeated guy comes into the UFC and just uses his right hand to introduce Timo Pakalin to the canvas head first. Oh, my gosh. The sound, bro. The sound when Azatar connected on the flesh of Pakalin. It was like, the one thing about us, Jason, is if you're a fight fan, here's the one skill you have. You have the ability. If you lose your sight and the only thing you have is your sense of hearing, you can hear when someone gets knocked out. Like, we know that, like, sound. That sound that happens when a guy's lights are out, and that sound happened, man. It's like a baseball going in a catcher's mitt. And I can't believe I kind of, like, it because that is inhumane. But Jesus, Otman Azatar has power for days, and in the lightweight division, that's going to go a long, long way. So he, to me, was just, boom, there's your SportsCenter highlight. And this guy, man, he's looking good early in his UFC career. Also, we had a knockout for Muslim Salikov against Nordin Taleb. Taleb just kind of looked out of his element throughout this fight, and the welterweight Salikov got the victory. Khabib's friend and Zubera Tukhov barely beat Lerone Murphy. It was a split draw. So he didn't beat Lerone Murphy, but I thought he did win that fight, 29-28. I scored the fight round one for Zubera, round three for Zubera, and round two for Lerone Murphy. So kind of a tough break for Zubera. Islam Makhachev, I thought, looked pretty good against Davi Ramos. Kind of completely and totally controlled him in the latter two rounds. And then you mentioned my boy, Carlos Diego Ferreira, living and training in my area, which maybe he might want to change that as he continues to move up the ranks. He was an underdog against Mirbak Taisimov, and he utilized his stand-up to get the victory, looked good in rounds two and three, and beat Taisimov in a very, very hot arena, but he got the win.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the storylines about that card from Saturday, is just how hot it was in the arena, and how the fighters basically were warming up essentially in the heat to prepare themselves for what it was going to be out there. Of course, that was UFC last weekend. We're in this long stretch of UFC events, a 6-week stretch of UFC events overseas as well. Of course, that train's going to roll on. Coming up this week to our neighbors to the north in Canada, so we'll talk about that card later on. But, of course, later on Saturday, it was Bellator 226, of course, kicking off the opening round of the Featherweight World Grand Prix. Also, we had a heavyweight title fight between Ryan Bader and Chet Congo. Of course, ultimately ends up being ruled a no contest when Chet Congo was accidentally poked in his eye. Tells the referee and the doctor that he's unable to see. And of course, we're going to talk a little bit about this, but just going through Chet Congo's Twitter timeline. So he quoted a tweet from Ariel Helwani, where Ariel had tweeted about how the fight was going to be overturned or ruled a no contest. And he had his tweet saying saying Congo seems to be in a lot of pain. And Chet quoted that tweet saying, "Yes, I was. Thank you for being honest." But the other tweet that Congo really had was addressing a clip that Josh Thompson had put out there, where Josh is now doing a podcast with John McCarthy. And it's a short clip where basically in the clip, it's Josh and Big John talking about, look, the moment you tell the ref you can't see, the fight is over. You know, and both of them noting that, look, which tell the ref is, hey, it's a little blurry. Give me a couple minutes. You know, let me get this thing, cleared up. But, of course, he said, yeah, see, now Congo quoted that tweet saying this: "Don't ever tag me again. Don't act like you know when you don't know expletive about me. And I'm tired of you guys trying to belittle me in every comment you make at each time I fight. I don't need you to like me, McCarthy, but at least do your excellent job with integrity and impartiality." Look, I think Chet Congo has to understand that people are going to look at that situation, heavyweight title fight, probably your last opportunity at becoming the Bellator heavyweight champion, understand why they are coming out there. But this is one thing I will say about that fight, and it's very... I relate to Khabib and Dustin, Daniel, is there was never a moment really in that fight that I thought Chet Congo was going to win that fight. Obviously it's a fall, so, it's all about football for me. I mean, I get on a plane later today to head to Charlotte for Thursday night football. And one of the things you'll hear about when you hear about offensive line play is a term you'll hear is that offensive lineman is playing stiff. And what it really ultimately means is that you're not seeing a lot of flexibility. And that's what I saw in that fight. I didn't see a lot of flexibility out of Chet. It was very clear Ryan Bader was the more athletic, the faster fighter. And if that eye poke doesn't happen, I don't think Chet Congo gets out of the positions he's in. I mean, to me, Ryan Bader went out there and did what he needed to do, and Ryan Bader looked great before the fight, unfortunately, was called.
Yeah, it was the type of performance where it ends in controversy, but there's no need for a rematch. And that tells you everything you need to know about the fight. Bader established who he was and how much better he was than Congo. And you know, so you got to applaud Congo for the run he's gone on in Bellator. I mean, literally, this man has reeled off 8 consecutive victories, his biggest one, his most recent one, over Vitaly Minnikov. So he looks like a 44-year-old fighter, for sure, moving inside the cage. And Bader was clearly the best one. And in terms of the controversy, I mean, Congo can get on Twitter and tweet twat and do whatever he wants and talk about how the world's against him. But it's simple, man. I'm a very simple man who enjoys facts and whatnot and reality-based opinions. In that fight, I have yet to see video of Ryan Bader poking Chet Congo in the eye. That video has not been surfaced. I don't know if there's a drone camera in the arena that will showcase that to me. Until I see that video, it is my belief that Chet Congo pretended like he was poked in the eye and escaped the fight with no contest. That is my opinion, largely due to the fact that this televised fight contained no video of Chet Congo getting poked in the eye. That is my opinion, because once again, I have yet to see video of Chet Congo getting poked in the eye. I don't know if there was a third hand coming out of Ryan Bader's body that was invisible, that touched him in the eye. I don't know what it was, where the eye poke came from. All I could say is that from the available video, which there is plenty, it appears as though Chet Congo did not get poked in the eye illegally by Ryan Bader, and he just kind of pretended like he did. And maybe his eye hurt really bad. That's probably what happened. This guy is a fighter. I should give him the benefit of the doubt. But maybe his eye hurt really bad and he thought he got poked in the eye. At the end of the day, if he thought you got poked in the eye but you didn't, you should still be the loser because it should be a TKO win for Ryan Bader.
Yeah, I mean, it was very clear Scott Coker, in his post-fight press conference, basically really didn't have much interest in running this fight back. You know, I watched that clip so many times and it almost feels like maybe there was when Bader was kind of moving his hand over his face that maybe something happened there. But, look, when you tell the referee you can't see, the fight is over. But, you know, Bader looked good, for what we saw on Saturday night. And it made me think, what Bellator heavyweight would we pick to beat Ryan Bader? And to me, I think there's only two options, and one of those options is not Rampage Jackson, because we saw, you know, if people stuck around for the Zone broadcast, see, and obviously Rampage and Chet Congo are very good friends, and that plays into it as well. But to me, there's only two fighters on the Bellator heavyweight roster that I think have a shot at being Ryan Bader right now.
The only one I have is Josh Barnett. So who's the other one that you're thinking of?
Oh, Josh Barnett was one of the guys I was thinking of.
Well, no, but there's two. Who's the other guy?
It's Vitaly Minnikov and Sergey Karatanov.
Oh, you didn't even have Barnett on the list?
No, I think he beats Barnett.
Yeah, I mean, I think Barnett's better than both those two, but talk me into these two guys. Tell me what you see in them as potential challengers for Bader.
I would say Minnikov is the biggest threat to Ryan Bader. I mean, look, I was there for that fight against Congo. That was an awful fight. I mean, it was just awful. I think Minnikov, skill-wise, has the best skills in the Bellator heavyweight division. Sergey obviously has the power. The only thing I think I'd be concerned with Sergey is Bader would just be faster. He'd be more athletic and might be able to just kind of, you know, get the fight to the ground. If Sergey could keep it on the feet, I think his power would be able to knock out Ryan Bader. But to me, Vitaly Minnikov is the biggest threat to Ryan Bader when you look, you know, and I understand why you say Josh Barnett, but I kind of look at, I think the athleticism of Bader would give Barnett a lot of problems.
Yeah, I think Bart Bader's going to be the light heavyweight champion for a long time. I mean, those are definitely the top challengers you pointed out there, and they bring some interesting questions. But Ryan Bader's just clicking on all cylinders, and it does seem like he's going to have keep away with this title from everybody else in the Bellator roster. He's going to be able to run through everyone. But Minnikov, Kharitonov, definitely real threats to him. And the reason why I say Josh Barnett is, look, this guy hasn't fought since 2016. He is also very old. I mean, this guy was fighting the UFC when it was literally UFC 28. You know, he fought Gann McGee in 2000. So it's been a while. But he's the one who kind of has a lot of upside in terms of where his skill level still might be, even if he spent a lot of time doing other things. So we have yet to see him fight, but he, to me, represents the most upside in terms of, like, he might still be a top 10 heavyweight, which makes him a real threat for Bader. Otherwise, though, I think Ryan Bader is going to hold on to this championship for a very, very, very long time. I mean, he looked unbelievable, and there just isn't a whole lot of challengers there.
Yeah, and if you look at, if his next fight's going to be at light heavyweight, you know, you look at maybe something like a Vadim Nemkov. Outside of that, there's not much. There's no one that, when you look at Bellator.com and you look at that light heavyweight roster, that sticks out to you. I know potentially it sounds like Bellator is going to do a year-end event in Japan. You know, rumblings are out there is that it's going to be headlined by Fedor versus Rampage, which I think makes a lot of sense there. But, you know, I was really impressed with Ryan Bader with what he did against Chet Congo. You know, I think the other fighter that really impressed me at Bellator 226 has to be Derek Campos. And maybe part of that is maybe, you know, I just thought Daniel Strauss, maybe my thoughts on him were too high coming into this tournament. You know, just a dominating performance by Derek Campos, just, you know, taking him down at will, keeping him there. And Daniel Strauss couldn't do anything. You know, in the other featherweight tournament fights, they all kind of went the way I pretty much expected. I didn't think Borax would finish Pat Curran, but he went out there and did that. Pedro Carvalho looked great against in his fight against Sam Cecilia. Manuel Sanchez looked very good. I think we saw with Taiwan Claxton, this guy just needs to develop. I mean, he got put into the Shark Tank right from the start, and I think we saw he still needs a lot of developing to do.
Yeah, man, I'm going to be honest with you. I think Claxton's a real talent, and I expect him to have success in the year 2021, is my thought after watching him fight Emmanuel Sanchez. And look, great start to the featherweight tournament. I really, really enjoyed it. It's time for me to eat some crow. I mean, there were two fighters I was completely and totally wrong about. You were right about Pedro Carvalho. I was not. I thought Sam Cecilia was going to get that one, and you're like, hey, I don't know about that, Daniel. You're like, I think Pedro Carvalho, he's going to win. He's a dark horse. And you were right, and I was an idiot. I was totally wrong. Damn, Carvalho had a nice submission win in the second round. He looked good. He looked skilled. This is absolutely a great opportunity for him to flaunt his skills. And then, Derek Campos ran through Daniel Strauss. I mean, my thought is Strauss looked hurt because I don't know what the heck was going on with his arm. But it just was not in a position to really defend or attack really throughout that fight. And Campos just told him with his wrestling, winning 10-8, 10-9 rounds. And I guess the general thought here is it was a passing of the guard from the former Bellator featherweight champions to maybe the next ones as Pat Curran also goes down to Adam Borax, who just looks awesome. Boring first round. Could not care less about that one. But, man, round two came. Borax turned it on and finished the fight with a second left. Adam Borax, to me, was the most impressive featherweight. Even though Derek Campos had the most lopsided win, Borax, to me, I was a little more impressed by because it did feel like Strauss may have been hurt. And then also, Sanchez got the win over Claxton and looks pretty good in doing so.
Yeah, I mean, I think heading out of 226, I mean, if you talk about the power rankings for the four winners – to me, number one would be Emmanuel Sanchez. Two, three is like 2A, 2B type thing with Adam Borax and Pedro Carvalho. And then four, I would put Derek Campos. You know, of course, the other four opening round matchups are going to take place here. You know, at the end of the month at Bellator 228, you know, on the broadcast, Josh Thompson really talking up Saul Rogers, who's going to be taking on Daniel Vaitchell in that opening round. Of course, you're going to hear from Henry Krause here momentarily as he's going to take on Darren Caldwell. Part of that, of course, got Patricio Pitbull versus Juan Archuleta. You know, when it comes to a preliminary card, I think, you know, the two victors that really stuck out to me Hey, would be Adam Piccolotti getting the win over Jake Smith. And the other one would be John Teixeira getting the win against Ashley Grimshaw. And John Teixeira, you got to kind of wonder, maybe is he, maybe a tournament alternate if someone's unable to continue in this tournament. And maybe he's one of those guys that Bellator looks at. He had a great win against Ashley Grimshaw, a TKO stoppage in the second round. So when it comes to prelims, those were really the two fights that stuck out to me.
Yeah, and I think it's possible we'll see Teixeira in the tournament, Jason, because this is a grind. Every fight is an opportunity to get hurt, and he may step in there. So, to me, those are the two prelims that really made were worth checking out. And, Gaston Bolanos lost in the main card to Daniel Carey. Yeah, a nice little card, Jason. I thoroughly enjoyed Bellator 226, even though there was controversy to end it.
Yeah, man, if you put some money on Daniel Carey on my book, you made a good amount of money. He was plus 775, so kudos to you if you did that. But, of course, MyBookie is a presenting sponsor of this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. And if you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why we go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on.
Absolutely, Jason. I wouldn't be telling you about these guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. MyBookie is the best. Simple as that. They have just about any sport you would want to lay down money on and do the smart thing. Listen, it's football season. I loved Sunday. Let's not talk about Monday as a Texans fan. I loved Sunday. It was all football all the time. I had plenty of opinions, and I was ready to lay down some money. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. And here's the deal, guys. You can literally bet on games after kickoff. If it's the second half and it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. And if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season, ladies and gentlemen, is the best time of year.
And if you're looking to make some bets this weekend on that UFC Fight Night card up in Canada, join MyBookie now, and they will double your first deposit. All you got to do is use the promo code MMAREPORT to activate the offer. That's promo code MMAREPORT. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid, and maybe you want to make a little wager on Donald Cerrone, betting underdog minus plus 165. Justin Gaethje minus 205. Maybe you want to put some money on the heavyweight action on this fight card. Todd Duffy, Jeff Hughes. So, of course, we want to thank MyBookie for their support of this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. And be sure to use that promo code MMA Report to activate the offer of MyBookie, doubling your first deposit. Of course, now it is time for the interview portion of the show. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Henry Corrales, who's going to be a part of Bellator 228, taking on Darren Caldwell here at the end of the month. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Trey Ogden, who's going to be the main event of Friday's LFA 76 on Access TV. He's going to take on Nick Brown. And then the final interview, you're going to hear my conversation with Mike Richmond, the Bellator vets, fought in LFA. He's now doing Bare Knuckle. He's going to be a part of Valor Bare Knuckle 1. Next week, of course, this is Ken Shamrock's Bare Knuckle promotion, so I had a chance to talk to him about his transition into Bare Knuckle, his fight, and a bunch of other things. So here's my conversations with Henry Corrales, Trey Ogden, and Mike Richmond. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's going to be a part of the Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix, which, of course, the opening round is going to conclude here at Bellator 228. Henry Corrales, Henry, appreciate time. Obviously, we're just a couple days since this tournament kicked off, man. I'm sure you probably were scouting out that competition that was at Bellator 226. Obviously, I think Derek Campos probably is the most surprising, especially the way he dominated Strauss. Anything really stick out to you about what we saw this past weekend?
What's up, Jason? Thanks for having me. I actually didn't get to watch the fights yet. I was hiking, so I didn't get to watch the fights.
I mean, obviously, you're deep inside preparations for this one. You and the team getting ready. Darren Caldwell, returning to 145 pounds. Were you surprised that this was the opening round matchup for yourself?
I don't know if much can surprise me in this game, dude. But it doesn't matter. I was ready for whoever.
As you and Eddie have gotten ready for this fight, obviously we think of Darion Caldwell. We think of the wrestling. I mean, there's no question about it. But is there something else that you and Eddie kind of saw that maybe surprised you a little bit about his abilities?
Not so much. We've kind of trained in the past with him, and Eddie used to be his striking coach. So we kind of know what he's about, and he knows what I'm about. And she's going to see who puts it together that night.
It seems like when people are talking about the favorites or maybe in the dark horses, your name doesn't get mentioned on either one of those categories. Does that bother you?
No.
I mean, do you feel people are underestimating you heading into this one?
Oh man, I've lost touch with what people think about me a long time ago in life, dude.
Not too worried about it. I mean, you know, is it just more like, you know what, screw it. I really don't. Like, the people outside my team, I really don't care what they say. All I care about is what, you know, people in my inner circle think.
Fuck, even that, dude. I don't know, man. I don't really worry about that kind of stuff.
Obviously, this tournament is, you know, it's obviously got the MMA eyes on it. You know, you got 16 of the best featherweights, you know, under Bellator contract fighting for this thing. Does this tournament style bring back anything to you, maybe, you know, younger in your career where it's like, man, I just like this because you know what? I know what, no matter what, as long as I win, at some point I'm fighting for the title.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And not only that, you know, there's a couple guys in this tournament that I've lost to. So it'd be nice to get back in there and get a little vengeance.
You know, obviously, you know, you have no idea who you could fight in the second round if you get past this, which I know you're not even thinking about that. But going into this tournament, were you thinking like, okay, there's some guys on my hit squad that I've got kind of circled in. And I think we know, obviously, one of those guys, Daniel Strauss, he's no longer part of the equation. But I got to imagine Pitbull, Sanchez are kind of the two guys on that list.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Pitbull being number one since he has the belt, so that'd be really nice to get back in there with him.
Would that be the ideal second round matchup? I mean, saying he gets past Juan Archuleta.
Hell yeah, that'd be sick.
In terms of Darion Caldwell, what do you think you have to do to walk away with a victory?
It's the same thing I have to do with everybody, and the same thing I will try to do with everybody. You know, I'm going to go in there well-conditioned and just ready to throw some heaters. It's kind of simple, man. You know,
do you think that because of obviously you talk about speaking of those heaters, we saw that heater in your last fight against Aaron Pico. I mean, do you kind of think that Darion's probably not going to try to engage in the striking and immediately just try to shoot?
You know what, dude? I think we're both just going to be doing more of the same of what we've been doing. And I think that's going to be the case with every single guy in the tournament. You could say you're going to do this, you could say you're going to do that, you could train for this, you could train for that. But, you know, actions and track record speaks louder than words. So it's pretty simple game, I think.
Obviously, fighting LA is something you've done here for Bellator now a couple of times. What do you enjoy the most about fighting back in California?
Just familiar faces. I love my friends and family, dude. I'll do anything for them. So just for them, and they do a lot for me. So just to being able to entertain them is just fucking, it means everything to me. You know, they're a big part of my motivation. So it'd be really nice.
I actually will be out in LA because the Bucks play the Rams that weekend. Any good restaurants I got to hit up on Saturday night?
Man, so you're going to be I would go to like the Palms or something, some steakhouse, dude. Go to a steakhouse.
Oh man, dude.
There's Morian's, Mastro's, yeah. Basics.
Give me a good medium rare steak. Oh yeah, I'm there.
Yeah. Medium rare and some carbs on the side. Let's go.
like after you make weight on that Friday, do you have like a go-to, like this type of food I got to get in my stomach?
Yeah. Like after the fight for sure. It'll just be some of mom's home cooking, you know. I'm Mexican, first generation Mexican American, and so I love just some good old unhealthy Mexican home cooked meal.
Definitely that there's something good to that. You know, of course, we've always talked about how, you know, reading books is a big thing in your life. What's not right now on the reading, you know, book for you?
I actually just read some fiction from Jack London. It's called The Sea Wolf. It's one of the better books I've read. My coach Santino recommended it to me, and I don't get to read a lot of fiction, and so this is a good, really good change of pace.
In terms of the preparations for this one, who's helping you get ready for this one in terms of training partners?
Well, it starts with the coaching here at Fire Ready with, you know, of course, Eddie Chow. He's always on my back. And we got Santino DeFranco and Angel Cejudo. So we're you know, basically my same training partners. You know, there's a move from the MMA lab to Fire Ready, and, you know, a couple of my really close friends and teammates, you know, Bobby Moffitt, Jafar Klaus, Hunter Azur, of course, JSP, and a couple other guys, Brett Cooper, you know, they came out here too, so it's been a very easy transition. And there's some new faces too. We got Paris Stanford, you know, a bunch of other guys running around here. So it's great work, man.
I know you and Hunter are close, and obviously Hunter had a great
win. Yeah, we're roommates.
Just you know, a couple weeks ago on the Contender Series, you know, just a great performance overall. Like when you know your buddy, you see him go out. Are you more nervous watching Hunter fight than you are when you fight?
Yeah. With me, like I've been a little known to be self-destructive in the past, so I don't really give a fuck too much about myself. So I don't really get nervous. You know, I do care about shit, but I don't know. But yeah, with my buddies, you know, I want to see them good, and it's out of my control, dude. So you know, there's more worried involved. You know, with myself, I'm somewhat in control. I got to, you know, I'm the pilot of my ship or whatever. So yeah, it's just different, man.
And it was such a weird environment that he's fighting in. I mean, you've got, you know, 100, maybe 200 people in the building, so you're able to hear anything. Have you ever fought in any type of scene like that?
No, not really. Yeah, it was just super different. Yeah, it really was. But it was cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, I was talking to a fighter who fought on it recently. He said he was the weirdest part about it. He goes, is you're so used to walking out and there's music playing. And there's no music playing and you're just kind of like, what's going on here?
It's super quiet. Yeah, it's really quiet.
Does that make it easier or harder as a cornerman?
Oh, it makes it way easier. Yeah, it makes it way easier. It's just more. It's less hectic. And Hunter kind of, I think he liked fighting that type of situation. But then again, he's the type of guy who just wants to fight in any situation, so he don't care.
But of course, we get to see your fight here, Bellator 228 on September the 28th. Of course, there in LA at the Fabulous Forum. Look forward to seeing the fight, and of course, we'll see that draw after all these fights are over. Has Bellator given you kind of any indication of how things going to work?
No, just pretty much what everybody else is has seen. So, yeah.
Of course, we'll have to watch on DAZN. Of course, the event exclusive on DAZN. Henry, man, as always, appreciate time. Of course, let me know if you can find you on social media. If there's anybody you want to shout out, the floor is yours, man.
Sweet, man. Well, thanks for having me again, Jason. It's always cool talking to you. I get to speak with you before every single fight, which is it's pretty exciting because it lets me know there's a fight coming up, and that's what I love to do. But yeah, check me out on Henry Corral 7A on Instagram, and that's my main platform.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is one of the men that's going to be the main event of Friday's LFA 76 as he looks for his third straight win. Trey Ogden takes on Nick Brown. Trey, man, appreciate the time. You know, looking on your Instagram, you know, one of the things that kind of stuck out about your Instagram was, you know, obviously in MMA, CBD is a huge deal. And I'm a CBD user.
Nice.
I think it's great. I take it, you know, before I go to bed, and honestly, I get some of the best sleep we've ever had. What drew you? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of sponsorship in MMA and CBD, but what drew you to be an active user of it?
Okay. So, So Native Hemp Co. is the he's the owner and creator of that's a friend of mine, and I have not been into supplements or like any kind of like unnatural anything. So I don't take a pre-workout. I don't take a post-workout. You're not going to see me with a protein shake. I don't believe you need that stuff. I stick to nature, and I believe that the human body, like, I'm not even big on like needing to eat right after my workout. Like, I don't think you need to do that either. Like, I think the body, I think of the body as an animal and nature. And so I've strayed away from any kind of recovery, anything like that. So I don't take any supplements, but CBD is really natural. It's just a plant. It's my CBD sponsor is organic. So it was just an all natural organic supplement that has all the same things that you probably heard that attracted you to it. You know, the recovery, the anti-inflammatory, the main thing I've noticed is better sleep. I sleep so much better when I'm taking the CBD than when I'm not. And so that was that. And then other thing I really like about it is the inflammatory benefits for like maybe the brain if you're getting hit all the time. And so I thought that'd be a good thing to take just in case. So that's kind of like what drew me to it is I'm always looking for like superfoods that I can use. Maybe that's kind of how I supplement is the superfoods. And so that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah, I got kind of involved in the industry about 2 years ago being a producer of a cannabis podcast. And so that's kind of how I ultimately got kind of introduced to CBD. And then, the sleep, I'm telling you, I know there's a stigma out there. I understand it. I get it. But I'm telling you, I didn't really have problems sleeping before. But like I know, because I you know, and then also like I had a toothache, and it kind of helped that with a little bit too. So, I'm all in on CBD. But also, it's fight week, and it's obviously you've been in preparations for this one. What's kind of, has there been like any big, way you've looked at this fight heading into it? I mean, obviously it's a huge fight for you. It's a main event. But is there anything about this fight that's, really been kind of the key message?
Not necessarily. I really need to finish my opponent. I don't like decision wins. I think the goal is to finish your opponent, and 15 minutes should be plenty long enough to do that. And so, coming off two decisions in a row, my main focus for this fight is just to get the finish. And I haven't fought somebody who's more of a grappling based. I'm just excited. I know Nick Brown's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and I teach the jiu-jitsu program at Glory, and so I'm ready to clash that way with him as well. So I'm excited about a slightly different stylistic matchup than I've had in a little bit, and I'm excited to get a finish over a really respected opponent who hasn't been finished yet.
In terms of looking for that finish, is it one of those things of you got to pick and choose your spots to make sure that you're not trying to force something that's not there?
Yeah, for sure. I usually, when I'm in the cage, I feel that pathway when I'm in there. So, I have many ways to finish people from many different positions, like any other really good, pro would. I'm not in there to force the result. That's just what I need. I need those, but I'm not focused on the result. I'm focused on the effort, and I'm focused on the process.
What do you believe your sense. What do you believe your key to victory is against Nick?
So I think the advantage I'm going to have over Nick Brown is that I'm more complete, and I think I'm going to be more complete in the micro transitions of the fight. And so I think that's exactly where my advantage lies, is I need to be winning the transitions of the fight, and I need to be putting the various martial arts together better than him in the cage.
The word blending is a word. I know that's a word that James Krause uses a lot there at Glory, of blending all aspects of MMA together. Was there a certain point in your career where you kind of realized that you were kind of mastering that, or have you still not been able to master? You're still kind of putting that together.
Yeah. So there's the art itself is growing and still being hammered out and developed. And so I've been in MMA now, this is my 9th or 10th year fighting. So I've been kind of like training through that process as well. And so like I several fights back realized like, oh, there's specific things you need to pull out of these different martial arts in MMA specifically. And that led me to this idea that I have now, which is like the primary idea in my brain, is that there is a martial art and it's the martial art. And it's been trying to be uncovered for like thousands and thousands of years. And we're at the tip of it. We're at the pinnacle of it. And it's starting to like come out as a martial art. The internet's helping that and MMA is helping that. We're putting all the arts together and competing under a rule set that allows the blend of all the arts, and in a time where everybody can watch every fight that ever happened because of the internet. So we're all kind of hammering that out. And so, you know, that's essentially what this martial art is a blend of all the other martial arts. And I want to be on the tip of like refining that.
You talk about how many years you've been involved in the sport. What would you say is the biggest learning lesson that you've taken in all these years of being a fighter?
It's hard to pick out like a single lesson, like right off the top of my head, but what kind of came to my mind there was like one thing you learn this adversity, and because it offers a constant flow from injuries here, injuries there, losing opponents, the weight cuts, got some adversity, you're going to face adversity when you're in the fight, you know, you might lose a fight, and that's a form of adversity that you have to come back from. And so, you know, just the ability to be resilient and to overcome adversity and stay on the warpath and stay focused on something for like a decade now, you know, has a lot of little micro lessons within that.
And of course, we're all going to be able to see your fight here in the main event of LFA 76 coming up on Friday night, of course, live on Access TV. Trey, man, I really appreciate time.
Yes,
of course,
sir.
Let everyone know they can find you on social media and the sponsors that have been helping out.
Yep. So I'm on Instagram mostly. My Instagram just like auto feeds my Facebook. So mostly Instagram, Trey_Ogden. And my sponsors are Native Hemp Co., as we started with, and Dakota Fightwear and Venom for this fight.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of the Valor Bare Knuckle inaugural show September 21st, live on pay-per-view, Fight TV, in demand, wherever you watch pay-per-views, it'll be available, Mike Richmond. Mike, I appreciate your time. I actually went to a Bare Knuckle event here in Tampa you know, when they had the Paulie and Artem fight. You know, one of the things that really stuck out to me, and this was my first time being at a Bare Knuckle event, that stuck out to me was you really didn't see, it was all headshots. There was never really any working to the body. Since obviously you've gotten the Bare Knuckle, why is that?
I think one of the biggest reasons is, I mean, I still like go to the body. I still target the body here and there, but it's a dangerous thing to do. Because if you catch an elbow, you don't have that glove. You don't have that glove really kind of protecting your hand as good. So you catch an elbow on an uppercut to the body, or you try to go uppercut to the head or solar plexus area, you clip that elbow on the thumb or a weird angle on your knuckle, it's gonna definitely hurt your hand. It might break your thumb, it might break a knuckle. So I think, you know, people are hesitant to throw those body punches for that reasoning. Because you put some zip on a shot and you catch an elbow, it hurts with gloves on if you catch a wrong angle on a body shot. So I think people are just really aware of that, you know, throwing bare knuckle, you know, elbows hurt.
Yeah. When you're sparring for a bare knuckle event, do you ever put gloves on?
Yeah, I do. Yep. I try to, when I spar with the bare knuckle mentality, I try not to spar with like a high punch count and kind of like, I try not to spar like I'd be in a gloved competition or like an MMA where I'm going to have my punch count higher. I try to be more precise with my shots, a little bit more precision, which is kind of my style anyway. So it works well with me, you know, 1, 2, 3 punch combo tops. And really kind of looking for good, clean sniper shots. I try to keep that in mind. But, yeah, it's hard to spar. You can't spar bare knuckle, obviously. You can't – even if you threw 4-ounce MMA gloves on, you spar like that, you're going to be messing up your face. I mean, unless you wore a really good face mask and a head protector, you probably could do, like, the 7-ounce type sparring. I really don't do that. I still kind of stick to my traditional boxing-style sparring.
You talk about that mentality. How would you say the mentality is right now in comparison to, you know, we saw you in Bellator or LFA?
The mentality is just different. For me, because now I can really focus on one aspect of my game, which is my favorite aspect of my game, is my boxing and striking and pressure and heading off my opponent, cutting off my opponent, attack, you know, never really giving up ground. I don't have to be too worried about, you know, obviously the takedowns, the clinch. I can get in the pocket. I can exchange. The beautiful thing is I love getting in the pocket. I love that range. I love that area of just that action and slipping, rolling, countering, attacking. So all the other elements of the MMA is kind of out the window. And now, from my understanding, I've talked with some people with the promotion before, earlier on when I was in talks with them before they even knew about this date. And that was one of my questions. I'm like, all right, are we going to go to more of your, like, the UK company that I fought with last year? Are we going to do the more pugilist traditional style where essentially it's boxing without gloves? Or are we going to do more of a dirty boxing? They're going to be like BKFC where they'll allow elongated clinch and, you know, dirty boxing. And from what they told me that when I first talked to him, it was going to be more traditional style. It's just going to be like boxing with no gloves on. Now, whether they changed their mindset on that, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But I'm prepared for both, whether they'll allow, you know, more long clinching and dirty boxing, or if it's just going to be, you know, like I said, the old school pugilism with just boxing with no gloves on.
How has that changed the way you get ready for the fight based on the two different rules, you know, different styles of bare knuckle?
I mean, I think you need to be more, when you get in that close range, that pocket range, you got to be more aware of, you know, them shooting in, trying to grab a clinch and, you know, trying to grab that collar, a half collar tie and ripping uppercuts. You kind of got to be more aware of that. So that range, you got to be more keen to, where you just can't sit there and slip and roll and work in that inside range. You kind of got to, you know, back yourself up a little bit more, fight at a little bit more distance, especially if you're going against a guy that, you know, that really likes to clinch and throw. I don't know if I know JC fought Chris Lytle, but I didn't really see that fight. I don't, like I said, I'm ready for both. If he wants to clinch, he's going to have a hard time clinching me, because I like to move my head, counter. I'll make you pay if you come in and not smart about coming into the inside. I'm going to make you pay.
You know, one of the things I noticed by, you know, following you on Instagram, I know you had a post about JC and kind of some of the road work that you're putting in. And it kind of made me think of, like, can you, like, where you're at now with where your weight is and everything, could you even fathom trying to get to 135?
No. The thought of cutting down to 135 again, it's like pains my stomach, my kidneys, everything. Just thinking of it. I'll never cut to 35 again. I'll never cut to 45 again. I mean, I don't even know if I do lightweight again. Maybe I'll do lightweight. Maybe I'll do 55. But yeah, I mean, the days of 45 and 35 are forever gone. Yeah, I'm just bigger and fatter now.
If for you, is it all about bare knuckle, or is kind of still that door to MMA still open?
I think the door is kind of always open if the right opportunity is there. You know, if I get the opportunity to kind of really retailer my MMA path and try to make a way back, I want to do MMA if it leads to me getting back to a big promotion. I don't want to kind of just do local things and just kind of fight to fight. I'm really excited about the bare knuckle scene. It is rising in the UK. It's rising here in the US. Valor is really backing it to make it a big thing. And I want to be a part of that bare knuckle brand. I want to be part of what people look at and like, oh shit, like Mike Richmond's one of the best bare knuckle boxers in the world.
I mean, obviously, over the last year, bare knuckle, it's an evolving sport here in the United States. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. I would say I'm indifferent. You know, I enjoyed it. I had a good time at the event. But what would you say, what do you think has to be done here in the United States to kind of take it to that next level?
That's a really good question. I think it's still in that beginning phase where it's like, you know, kind of what mixed martial arts was and MMA was in the beginning, where it's like, what the hell is it? You know, this is crazy, barbaric, whatever. I think it still has that to a lot of fans, where it has that feeling, cause they're like, oh, they don't got gloves on. Oh my God. They're like killing each other. I think it's just going to take more time and more events. Obviously this casino forbears they're allowing it here. I don't know if it's the whole state of North Dakota or if it's just the casino that's allowing it. Obviously, a Wyoming commission, and then Florida and Mississippi. And I think it's just going to take more events for other commissions and just kind of pleading with them, or not even pleading, just kind of stating your case like it is safer. Like, the only thing, it just causes more cuts that gives you the appearance of that. It's, gives the appearance that it's more violent and more deadly. But the number of shots and the number of heavy, you can't throw heat every time. Yeah. Like, you can't be throwing heat. You can't be throwing awkward angles. You know, the weird looping punches where you're, where a glove, a 10-ounce glove, or even a 4-ounce glove, that angle coming in might protect your knuckle. You can't throw that bare knuckle. You'll break your hand. So you can't, you can't be swinging for the fences every time. You got to be a little bit more precise. You got to know when to pull back. You got to know when to fire the heavy shot. It takes skill. It definitely takes skill. Don't get me wrong. There are going to be guys still coming up. They're going to go in there. They're going to just swing and go crazy and have like a bar fight style mentality. But it's just going to take time to grow. I mean, it's just going to take time to grow and for people to realize that it's a legitimate thing. I think the only reason why, and now I could be wrong, the only reason why they moved to, you know, glove style boxing way back in the day was obviously to prolong the fights, make the fights, you know, last longer, more, you know, more action, more rounds, to keep their hands in the fight, to keep their hands in the game.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing I notice is, like, you know, don't blink during these fights because they get in, you know, pretty quickly. You know, that was a big thing that I stuck out. I mean, you talk about that mentality. Did you have to change your mentality of not going balls to the wall with those hard shots like you maybe did in MMA in comparison to bare knuckle?
Actually, I think my bare knuckle, I think my style tailors the bare knuckle because I didn't really technically always go balls to the wall. The only time I really struggled when I was hesitant throwing at all. I was just, that's when I always wouldn't get in rhythm. It's when I pressure and I attack, but I'm really calculated with my striking. That's when I was always really successful. And I think when you got to be calculated in bare knuckle, that's it plays into my style. Like, if you just can't go in there swinging away, you can go in there swinging away and just kind of hope, all right, hopefully I catch him in the temple, hopefully I catch him in the jaw and it's over. But if you fight a good talented guy that has a good cover, has a good head movement, and you just go balls to the wall, and then, all right, well, then after that adrenaline wears down, then the talent is going to really come out, and then you're gonna have to face that. But short answer, my style of fighting, my style of boxing from MMA directly translate into bare knuckle for me anyways. Cause I just, my precision, I'm just very precise. I'm very economic with my strikes. I know when to pick up my punch count if I got someone hurt, but like, I'm going to be looking for the right shot. I'm going to be setting up the right shot. I'm very instinctual. I like to see what I'm doing out there. I don't really have like, all right, a game plan. I'm going to do this. Stick to the game plan. I'm going to go out there, fight my fight, look for openings, and then exploit it.
And of course, we're going to be able to see this fight here on September the 21st, the inaugural Valor Bare Knuckle Show. Of course, live on pay-per-view. Fight TV is one of those places you can watch this event. Mike, as always, appreciate time. Of course, let me know that you can find you on social media. If there's anybody you want to shout out, the floor is yours, man.
Yeah, man. I'd like to just make a big shout out to Spearman Rhino Gentlemen's Club. I'm getting sponsored by them. Obviously, I work for them. I manage a club for them out here in Pittsburgh. But to be sponsored by them too, like on the big stage, you know, for them taking care of me in that aspect. If you have a Spearman Rhino, wherever you're in your city, go check them out. And then just, you can follow me on Instagram, The Marine Richmond, Twitter, Mike USMC Richmond. I got a Facebook fan page. Make sure you check out this pay-per-view because, I mean, you're going to see me knock somebody out.
And there was my conversations with Henry Corrales, Trey Ogden, and Mike Richmond. Appreciate all those fighters coming up on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. You talk about their upcoming fights. But, Dan, when we talk about fights, we've got
a great main event coming up on Saturday night there in Vancouver. UFC Fight Night on ESPN Plus. Donald Cowboy Cerrone versus Justin Gaethje. You know, we've got the BMF title on the line in November, but man, these guys could definitely be in line for that type of title because this has got violence just written all over it.
Oh, dude, this is one of the best fights I've ever seen on paper. Simply put, Cerrone Gaethje, ho. Get the group text going, guys. This is the fight to show you're a casual MMA fan, man. Get some daddy sodas. If you want to watch other sports, that's fine, man. You know, I'm sure you got that ESPN Plus subscription. Watch some college football and then end the night. There ain't going to be a better college football game than that action between Cerrone and Gaethje. I'm telling you that right now. I don't care if it's triple, quadruple overtime. The face punching and kick meeting that you're going to see between these two guys is going to be unbelievable. And this is just the ultimate way to cap off a night with your friends if you're going to do that on Saturday, Jason.
You know, we've seen Donald Cerrone in these type of spots over the last year or so where he's the underdog. You think about that fight against Alex Hernandez, really sticks out to you where, you know, if you've been a betting backer, a DraftKings backer of Donald Cerrone, he's likely made you some good money over the last year. And, you know, when I think of Justin Gaethje, you know, obviously you think about this just, you know, him just throwing bombs from all angles. But the other thing I think about him is he's constantly coming forward and he's constantly throwing leg kicks. But of course, the other thing is he is a fighter that tends to wear down as the fight goes on. I think if you're Donald Cerrone, maybe part of the thought process is I've got to weather that 7 to 8 minute storm you're going to get out of Justin Gaethje and then try to take over from minute 8 and on. I like Gaethje in this spot. I just think his pressure is going to give Donald Cerrone a lot of problems.
I think it is. There's a lot of concern for Cerrone because it's been 3 months since his last fight. And I know 3 months sounds like a while, but having watched that Tony Ferguson fight, it didn't seem like nearly enough time, to be honest with you, to prepare for a Gaethje fight, to do the proper training. But look, this is going to be Donald Cerrone's 50th fight in his entire career. He's had a long and hard career. To be honest with you, it's probably time to start thinking about retirement, not because of his skill level, but because of the fact that he's probably like suffered a lot of damage to himself in all these amazing fights we've seen throughout his career. So, you know, and I only say that because I was listening to a podcast, the Joe Rogan podcast. He had Andre Ward on there. Mm-hmm. And Andre Ward, like, retired, like, undefeated in his early 30s and kind of escaped. And that kind of, like, was – it kind of reminded me, like, man, we always see all these guys stay way too long for Cerrone. I mean, if he loses this fight, I think it might be worth it to call it quits. But, I mean, he won't. He obviously won't. You know, this dude loves fighting. He'll probably fight for 10 more fights, to be honest with you. I think the Cowboys going to ride one more time on his horse and get that victory. I like Cerrone to win a war. We talked about my bookie earlier before the interview part. If I would look at real hard for my bookie bets here with Donald Cerrone. You know, he's in the plus 160, plus 170 range. This guy is battle tested. I think he's going to be able to survive the early onslaught from Justin Gaethje. And when this gets deep, he's going to thrive. And I think Donald Cerrone gets a third round victory.
Yeah, when you look at some of the prop bets out there, I think this should really tell you what the bookmakers think about this fight. Fight goes to decision, plus 410. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 620. So I would be very surprised if this fight does go all 25 minutes. You know, if you're looking for the prop bets, maybe you look at Donald Cerrone. You know, maybe that inside the distance is something to look at with him.
Well, what did you say the odds were for the decision?
Plus 410, the fight goes to the decision. So put down 100, win 410, or minus 620 if you think it won't go to decision.
Look, this is probably a bad suggestion, given that, A, this fight involves Donald Cerrone and Justin Gaethje. B, I literally just picked Cerrone to win via finish. C, Justin Gaethje literally has not gone the distance in his entire UFC career. And hasn't gone the distance only twice in his 22 fight career. So this is probably bad. I like that a lot. That decision prop right there. That's heavy odds for a fight that involves two tough son of a guns.
But does Gaethje have a 25-minute gas tank? I don't know if his I don't know if his fighting style allows him to have that gas tank.
He's literally never entered the fifth round in his career.
No, I mean, this is look, this is why you love a Justin Gaethje fight. And why, to me, he is always must-watch television, because he's going to bring the fight. He is not going to sit back and be a counter-striker. He's going to go in there and he goes, you know what? You might land two punches on me, but I'm going to throw a hell of a punch that's going to hurt you at some point. And that's why you – and Donald Cerrone is the same way. Cerrone is going to come in, and this is why – this is just one of those fights. I mean, look, we have so many UFC events, and there are events that you're just like, not necessarily loving this event. But to me, like, it's kind of like last week in a way. It didn't matter what fight 1 through 12 was. You were there for fight 13 of Khabib Nurmagomedov and Justin Gaethje. When you look at this fight card, you're not there for, you know, the other fights. You're there for Justin Gaethje and Donald Cerrone. You're going to be in front of your television set on Saturday night, or in front of your, you know, your tablet, your phone, whatever it may be, to watch Cerrone Gaethje, because you, whether this fight lasts 1 minute, 10 minutes, or 25 minutes, you know it's going to be action-packed the whole time.
Yeah, man, you absolutely are guaranteed that. Again, just so excited for this fight card in Canada, man. I mean, the poster looks amazing. And I really like the way the poster looks with Cowboy over Gaethje, the blue and the orange. And poster looks amazing. I think this fight's going to be amazing. And I think whoever wins this fight, man, there's a lot to be gained. You're going to put yourself right. I mean, if Cerrone wins, he's absolutely a guy that might get that Conor McGregor fight. If he gets that win over Gaethje, because to me, if Conor's not going to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov and he's not going to fight Nate Diaz because he's got to fight with Masvidal, I think Cowboy's McGregor has money written all over it. So a lot on the line for both big accounts of these guys.
Now, when I look at the rest of this card, there are some fighters on this card I'm kind of interested to see how they perform. One of those fighters is Jimmy Crute, who is going to be a part of the main card, as he is going to be taking on Misha Cirkunov, of course. You remember, man, Daniel, it doesn't seem that long ago that Misha Cirkunov was like, this could be the guy to challenge John Jones. Boy, a lot has changed over the last 2 years.
A lot has changed over the last 2 years, big time. I mean, Johnny Walker sent him crashing down with that knockout win over Cirkunov, but the betting odds are really showing Cirkunov a lot of credit, man. I mean, these odds are basically even between Crute and Cirkunov. And I thought Crute would have been a little bit bigger of a favorite just because he seems on the up and up, and Cirkunov just seems completely lost. So for Misha Cirkunov, Jason, get the trains going. This is a crossroads fight. If he beats Crute, maybe he can start climbing back up and getting to where he once was. But if he loses, I mean, this might be his last fight in the UFC. That's definitely the fight that I had marked down. Obviously, you have Todd Duffy returning in the heavyweight division. That will definitely be interesting. He's a slight underdog against Jeff Hughes. Glover Teixeira and Nikita Krylov is the co-main event and is a solid fight as well. I mean, the whole main card's somewhat interesting. Uriah Hall versus Antonio Carlos Jr. Antonio Carlos Jr. is just a very, very talented middleweight who continues to impress me. He is coming off a loss to Ian Heinisch, but he's going up against Uriah Hall, and I guess if you're looking for a dog, maybe Hall at +190 is the guy to put a little money on.
You realize the last time we saw Todd Duffy fight was July 15th, 2015.
That's unbelievable.
That was when he was knocked out by Frank Mir. By the way, you know what your co-main event of that fight night card was?
No.
Tony Ferguson versus Josh Thompson.
Wow. So are you saying put some money on Jeff Hughes?
Well, I mean, look, I think what you're going to see out of Jeff Hughes is Jeff Hughes is going to try to use his takedown abilities to take Todd to the ground. I don't know what to expect out of Todd Duffy. I will tell you, there are two other fighters in this card that you did not mention that do interest me. One is Miles John, who we got to see on the Contender Series. He's taking on Cole Smith. And the other one is just because I've had a chance to get to know this guy over the years. Hunter Azure, who's going to be taking on Brad Katona, is something that interests me. Louis Smoka, I've had a chance to talk to Louis over the years. And then, of course, we should note that Tristan Connolly stepping up on fight week to take on Michelle Pereira. Of course, Michelle lost his opponent earlier this week. Tristan Connolly is someone I had a chance to talk to. Obviously, being a Canadian fighter, being right there in the region, he gets this opportunity for, great to hear him. Unfortunately, was going to try to get Tristan on the show this week, but kind of our schedules didn't match up with my travel schedule and everything he's got going on during fight week. But maybe Todd Duffy is that guy that you look at, and maybe that is kind of the intrigue after the main event because you don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, look, Todd Duffy, first off, this dude has an unbelievable look. I mean, he was so jacked in his early run in the UFC, and he had just like a really, really notable win over Tim Haig. His very first fight in the UFC, he got a 7-second knockout. That really built up a lot of hype for him. And it was in a point where the UFC did a good job of building up guys on the undercard. And since then, he's kind of struggled and got some issues and health issues and whatnot. So, Todd Duffy, big-time intrigue. I guess another way to frame the difference between his inactivity versus his opponents is his opponent, Jeff Hughes, has fought 12 times. He's 10-2. Todd Duffy has also fought 12 times, 9-3. They have the same amount of fights, but Todd Duffy literally started his professional career seven years earlier than Jeff Hughes, and they have the same amount of fights.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Todd Duffy's resume, and the only fighter on his resume that's currently in the UFC is Alistair Overeem. Everyone else is no longer in the UFC. We look at his wins, Anthony Hamilton, Phil DeFries, and Tim Haig. Those are his wins, but you know, there is kind of this, well, what to expect out of him. And, it is going to kick off, early on Saturday, 8 p.m. is your main card start time. Of course, that'll be on ESPN Plus. I believe, prelims will be at 5 p.m. Eastern time. But Dale, before we get out of here this week, I talk about some MMA news and notes. Of course, last week we talked about Chris Cyborg signing with Bellator, and of course she met with the media on Saturday night. And Daniel, I'm just over Chris Cyborg talking about her relationship with UFC and Dana White. It's like, can we just move past this? Can we just move on?
No, we can't.
It feels like the ex-girlfriend doesn't want to move past the boyfriend. Like, or the boyfriend doesn't want to move past the ex-girlfriend.
Wow, politically correct, Jason.
I mean, it's just this, I'm just like, okay, I get it. You know, look, were you treated correctly? No, you weren't. I think we can all understand that. But it's also like, okay, you know, look, and I also think that it's, as media people, we are also continuing this conversation as well. Like, let's stop asking Chris Cyborg these questions and let's just look ahead, because it's kind of like, okay, let's move on. Like, let's stop. I'm just over it.
I like the political correct, Jason. You made the girlfriend example and you're like, oh shoot, I got to pivot and also make the boyfriend example. You're right though.
Look, we all have boys who have not gotten over a girl. Come on.
I'm looking at you, Jared. Come on, bro. Yeah, it's true. It's true. That's a great example. Look, here's the thing. They're not going to stop talking about it because you can also blame the journalist too. Like, you know, that's what journalists are going to ask her about, because it's going to get more clicks than Chris Cyborg's opinion about Julia Budd. Mm-hmm. I hate to tell you this, but a headline. Spot on. I mean, and it's just a monster that feeds itself, and it's annoying and it's tiring, and there's nothing new that's going to be uncovered between these two. I mean, the real interesting pivot in this Cyborg UFC story was absolutely her doctoring the video. Like, that's just hilarious to me. Her doctor editing a video. But I'm ready to move on, Jason. I will sign that pledge.
Yeah, I did find it interesting. It sounds like her versus Julia Budd will not happen. in 2019, you know, looking like it's going to happen in 2020. But, of course, UFC did make some big news over the past couple of days. They've been trying to make that UFC 244 main event. They really wanted it to be Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington. Of course, I'm sure everyone has seen the articles with Colby Covington, you know, not obviously not happy with the financial offer that was put to him. And Diaz Masvidal headlines UFC 244, hashtag can't wait, hashtag will watch, hashtag I'll be in front of the television on that night. Looking forward to that one. But one of the things that Colby Covington said, and look, I don't agree with a lot of things Colby Covington says, but to me, he's spot on this one. It makes more sense to have Colby Covington headline the card in Washington, D.C. Look, you know, whether you hate the president, you love the president, you're indifferent about the president, the fact is, when you look at the marketing aspect of the Trump family showing up for Colby Covington's fight, the president tweeting about Colby Covington, if you're the UFC, why would you not have him fight in D.C.?
Yeah, you got to do it. Look, I'm politically, I could be anywhere. I'm not going to reveal where I am, but I will say, taking the politics out of it, damn, that would definitely get the spotlight on the sport for a moment. And it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because like, if you are on the other side of the political, like let's say you're on that side, you're going to enjoy seeing that. And then if you're on the other side, you're going to enjoy seeing him lose, and you're going to enjoy seeing those people disappointed. So to me, excuse me, it's a win-win for either side, because it's like textbook pro wrestling. You have your baby face and your heel, and you're going to provide an attraction for either one. I mean, it's kind of sad that that's where we are in our politics, but it's definitely an opportunity the UFC should capitalize on, because that's kind of how we look at it. We're kind of cold-blooded. We're like, what makes the most sense? And to me, financially, big event type deal, it's just right there for you to take. And I think they should go for it and put him in that Washington card.
Dude, I'm telling you, if you're Dana White, you have a relationship with Donald Trump, why not pick up the phone, give him a call, say, hey, Mr. President, if I have Colby Covington headline DC, would you show up? If the answer is yes, you got to put Colby Covington in the main event of that fight card. You have no choice.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've covered two presidential visits to different areas, one in El Paso, one in my hometown or my home area. That seems like a logistical nightmare from a Secret Service standpoint to have the president in a live event.
Dude, I'll never forget. So this was when George W. Bush was president. So he was coming to One Buck Place, which is the training facility for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I was going in, and this was when, I want to say it was when John Gruden was the head coach. It may have been Raheem Morris. And he was visiting the team. He was coming to practice. And literally, I drove into the facility, and I look up on the roof, and it is snipers all across the roof. I was like, okay, well, the president's definitely here.
Yeah. It's scary. I've seen those. I mean, they're probably different snipers. I hope they're different. If they're the same ones, they might be a little old now. Might have a bad shot. But yeah, dude, it's scary. And like the other thing is, they block off the roads when president drives, and they keep it blocked out for 30 minutes.
So my house is – so where I live in Tampa is – I am in the flight line for MacDill Air Force Base, which is the home of Central Command. So yeah, anytime the president comes in, whether it's been President Trump, President Obama, President Bush, whoever it's been, since I've lived here, man, when they're in town, don't even leave your house, because you are not leaving my area, because all the roads are closed. Yeah, but it's also with the whole Colby Covington, Usman, that whole situation. Like, I just want to know, what is the truth of what's really going on here? Because it ultimately feels like this is a fight that just is never going to take place. And I think Usman's just got to put himself kind of, look, you got to defend the title at some point, man.
Yeah, but I think Colby's he's shown a history of being a frustrating fighter to agree on a fight. And I think the benefit of the doubt lies with Usman.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact is just, you know, Colby has fought recently and Usman hasn't. I mean, I just, you know, hopefully that, you know, somehow this fight can come together, but man, who knows, maybe we see Colby versus Woodley. I mean, it's like we're waiting for all these dominoes to kind of fall in the welterweight division to see how this thing is going to play out. But, you know, Masvidal Diaz, oh man, you talk about how much we love Cerrone and Gaethje this weekend. Diaz Masvidal is another level.
Yeah, because Nate Diaz is a superstar. And I'm glad the UFC is realizing that, man. He is one of the biggest names in the promotion. He's damn exciting. And Masvidal is going to bring out the best in him because he is also one of the most fun fighters to watch.
So you hear they're going to make a title for this, a legit title. Like, so when Bruce Buffer announces that it's for the BMF title, does he say the full words or does he just say BMF?
Man, is Bruce Buffer going to announce it?
Yeah, it's pay-per-view, yeah.
No, but he's going to announce the BMF title?
Yeah, there's going to be a legit, they're making a title belt for this one.
Yeah, I know they're making a title belt, I didn't know. This is the greatest thing ever. He better say bad mother effer, and then just,
could you imagine? Oh, that would be awesome. Like everyone would lose their mind if he says the full words.
What's he got to lose?
It's pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, just do it, man. Just do it. Because then that'll be a clip that'll be on Twitter forever. I mean, just, yeah. But I love that fight. I saw Till versus Gastelum's going to be the co-main event of that card, which really... That's an odd matchup.
Yeah. What strikes you about that one?
If Gastelum uses his wrestling, to me, I just think he just beats Darren Till up on the ground. But, you know, that's not really necessarily been Kelvin Gastelum's thing. It could be a fun fight. You know, it's just a question of what does Darren Till look like at 185 pounds? Because I feel like Till and Gastelum are kind of in the same boat where getting the 170 is so tough, but if there was a 175 pound weight class, it would be ideal for them.
Yeah, I definitely think so too. And you look at their body frames and how they perform, and obviously some of the issues Till has had when it comes to making weight. I think it's going to be a good fight card, man. I mean, I'm always excited to watch Johnny Walker fight, and he's got a fight against Corey Anderson. And I think Edmund Shabazian is going to be on this fight card too against Christoph Jocko. That's a middleweight I'm keeping my eye on. And of course, Steven Thompson.
I was surprised by that matchup.
Because of the jump up or?
Yeah, the jump up in competition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought they would slow play Edmund a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a tough matchup against Jocko. That's
but, you
a
know,
fact.
That's not really, you know, Scott Coker would do the slow build.
Yeah, the 5-year slow build. For sure.
Yeah. Come on. We've seen it with AJ McKee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe he'll get a fight against a guy. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's in the featherweight Grand Prix, so it's finally time.
Oh yeah. There's no quote unquote easy fights there. So, but yeah, looking forward to, UFC 244, but that's still 2 months away, Daniel. We got a long time before we get there. But of course, do want to thank our presenting sponsor, MyBookie. Be sure to go to mybookie.ag, use a promo code MMAReport, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. That is the promo code MMAReport. Just visit mybookie.ag. You play, you win. You get paid, especially you want to make a bet on this weekend's fights. Maybe you like Donald Cerrone being the betting underdog. So look forward to catching these fights this weekend. As I got a weekend off, Daniel. That's the advantage of having a Thursday night game. You get the weekend off. It's just a really short week.
Yeah, man. I hope you enjoy your Thursday, brother, and you have a good one. Because I'm sure it's hard to work during the week, but you finally have one of those rare weekends off in the NFL season. And, hey, man, you can watch Florida State play football. They're really good at that sport, right, Jason? Oh, no, it's all right. The Aggies suck, too.
I will tell you, so at the end of the game last week, you know, because I watched this game. I'm just frustrated watching this team play. Mm-hmm. And
my wife goes, they're going to miss this extra point. FSU's going to win. And I just look at her like, whatever. Come on. It's an extra point in college. Who can't make that? And they miss it. And she's like, you're not happy? I'm like, we should have beat this team by like 40 points. We suck.
Yeah. Dude, if you're a freaking Power 5 team and you go toe-to-toe with Louisiana Monroe, dude, gosh.
We had a head coach with a minute left in the game. It's fourth down. The Noles got to punt the ball. And this dude calls a timeout to stop the clock.
I'm telling you right now, you're getting a new head coach next year. Because 2 weeks into the season.
$17 million. Just to trust buy him out.
They'll find the money, bro. Like, yeah, no, if man. You don't perform
FSU
at Florida State.
FSU don't got Alabama money. We don't got Texas A&M money.
Yeah, that's true. That's
Texas
true,
A&M
man.
Could, yeah, they could write that check. And be, yeah, I've understand that Willie's going to be here for a minimum another year. He looks lost on the sidelines. I'll tell you that. He looks lost. Like, yeah. He does, like, you know, it's kind of like that, the way Dustin Poirier looked after UFC 242. Looked lost. Like, I don't know what to do to beat this guy. But for me, it's always weird being home on a Sunday. Because I'm like, mm-hmm. I should be in a stadium.
Mm-hmm.
My wife doesn't love it because then I just watch NFL Red Zone all day long.
Yeah, you're like, you're 1 week with me. And nope. Yeah, it's all right, man. There'll be plenty of MMA to watch, too. But I hope you enjoy your weekend, buddy.
Hope you enjoy your weekend, too. Of course, be sure to give us a follow on Twitter. Follow the podcast at the MMA Report. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Of course, my personal Twitter and Instagram is at Jason_Floyd. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. So let's go wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com and all of your favorite podcasting platforms.
This is a Southern Hospitality with DJ Eakin Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
So if you got a mom that has a kid, you know, because to me, I ain't gonna lie, I'm probably telling my kid, bruh, come on, bruh, it's book time. What advice would you?
I think the main thing that I like to tell parents is, one, there's nothing else in your child's life that is going to give them immediate feedback on how well they're doing or how well they're performing at all. You can tell your child, hey, do this, and you'll be a good boy, or you'll be a good girl, or this will work out for you. And they have to kind of hope that they're on point or doing as well as you claim they need to do. On a video game, that's immediate feedback of, you know what? I didn't jump far enough. I need to hold down B a little longer. And guess what? Then I'm going to make the jump. And guess what? When I make the jump, I'm going to get a little trophy at the end of it that's going to tell me how many points I got. I know when, if I get more points than that, I'm doing better than I was doing previously. And that's immediate feedback that we kind of underestimate in this world, especially this world of technology now that we have with social media, where kids are being constantly reminded of how little they are valued and or not of value because they don't have this, they don't look like this, they don't come from this, they don't know this, or they don't have that. And that's a lot of pressure. Right. So where do you think you're going to get some type of break, some type of ego boost from a video game? And you're going to get that dopamine, and that child that you might think is a problem with gaming, they're just trying to feel like somebody. They're just trying to achieve something and keep themselves motivated and going through life. So you can't knock that, right?
Right.
So the best thing to do, instead of trying to find an error in that, is find direction in that. Meaning, okay, I got a child that likes to play video games. I feel like his social skills are weak because right. of the video game. What I need to do? Maybe I put him in an esports league where he's with teammates, he's communicating, he's learning how to cope and lose on a platform. That's coping skills.
Right.
And guess what? Your child is going to be better from that.
Southern Hospitality with DJ Eakin can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.